try to finish up today. This topic has taken us a little while. It's, I guess, by its very nature, an infinite topic. The topic of the Yasisa Yashav HaTov, or the notion of Liftim Mishur Sadin. And we focused on last time by the fact that we have a couple of sources. We have the imperative of Yasisa Yashav HaTov, which the Ramban understands to mean an imperative to see the pattern behind all of the mitzvos, and therefore to recognize also that sometimes we have to go above and beyond, that we have to go listening to Shuras Adin. And we saw also the Gemara in the end of the sixth parak, which told the story of Rabbi Bar Chana, a very important Gemara for our themes in this area. The discussion about his workers who apparently, at least according to one understanding, were negligent and broke his stuff, and he required, he withheld their property as payment, and Rav told him that he had to give it back, and he said, Dinach, is that really halacha? He was told yes, because Laman Telcha B'der told him, and then they wanted payment also because they said we were hungry, and he was told once again he has to pay them because Orchos Tzadikim Tishmor. And then there's another source also, the Gemara in the second parak, which appears in the Kama as well, where Hamaisa Sharia Asun, part of Yisrael's instruction to Moshe by giving the instructions of the general principles of life, is also invoked by the Gemara as a source for this din of Lifnim Meshura Sadin. So we have to try to figure out what exactly is going on here with the different Makoras. So first, also, just again, Bav Metzia seems to be able to be a one-stop shopping for our Mar Makomos here. So there's a Gemara and Daf Kufchas in Bav Metzia, just to add this into the equation. So we saw in the second parak that Lifnim Meshura Sadin is also a major theme in the area of Hashavas Aveda, that there are many times, many different examples one could give, where somebody doesn't seem, based on the second parak of Metzia, to be obligated in Hashavas Aveda, but the Gemara says, and later poskim say all the more so, that there is an obligation to go Lifnim Meshura Sadin. So it's also worth being aware of the Gemara in Daf Kufches and Aleph, where the Gemara tells us about the Dinah de Bar Metzra, that there is a halacha that if somebody is about to sell land, and land is not worth the same amount to every person in the world, it depends on what you already have and what you could do with it, etc., etc. So let's say you want to sell some land, and you have a friend who owns the land adjacent. So to him, the land that you want to sell is much more valuable because he could build something bigger by connecting the two plots. So there, the Gemara says that it's appropriate to give him the right of first refusal, to allow him the right to buy it first. That's the din of Bar Metzra. It appears over here in Daf Kuf Ches and Aleph, the Gemara in the ninth parak. And the Gemara says that this is a reflection of the principle of the Asisa Yashiv HaTov. It's simply the right thing to do. So I give him this opportunity to get the land that's uniquely valuable to him. So all these principles coming from, now I guess, let's say three or four different Makoros, Yasisa Yashiv HaTov, Hamaisa Asher Yasun, and the Pasuk in Mishlei that was quoted in the Rav Rahama story. So if you take a look, flip back and forth, the Tosfos and Daf Chav Dalet, which addresses a little bit where these various principles come from. So Dalet and Beis, the Tosfos quotes the idea of Nim Meshuras Adin. The third Tosfos on the page. So you see it says over there, Lifnim Meshuras Adin, Me'asher Yasun Nafkalon. This is derived from the Pasuk of Asher Yasun. It's derived later on in the coming of the Pirkan. So says the Gitosis, Etema do a Maisa Kurahacha ki the Maisa the Kaman, both the Rabbi Shmuel, Bahagaz Lakama, both the Rabbi Chia, Maradina Shulchan, and Sarah, Lakam Basaf Parak Omnin, Maisa Kurahacharina, Laman Telchu B'der Tovim. So we have a different Pesukim being brought here. And the Pasuk then, the story of Rabbi Chana, Laman Telchu B'der Tovim, Shumi Dibre Kabbalah. That's not only different, but it's not even in Chumash. That comes from Nach, And the pasuk from that would seem to be less preferable. Nonetheless, that's quoted. There, the Gemara doesn't even invoke this pasuk of Asher Yasun, which is Midivrei Torah. So the Yishlomar says, Tosus Lomaisi Krad Asher Yasun. So here's a principle. It says, when is it that we quote this idea of Asher Yasun? Only in a situation where other people would be chayiv, where the principle exists, but he himself is pater. This come over here where you have somebody who's a zaken v'ainu l'sichlodo, and he's theoretically pater from returning property, but he does anyway. So that's like a situation where somebody else would be chayiv. The principle exists, just he has a personal exemption. He does it anyway. So basof l'mishur sadin, and he did l'mishur sadin kama achayiv. So like others would. So then that's the appropriate example for of asher yasun. V'hacha b'shmaisin. The Hadrina Basa Tracy Acheshasa, like or this Gemara here where they returned the property after many years later. So Kuliam of Turim, so in this situation rather, excuse me, so here everyone would be potter, so they, excuse me, this is a different situation. So Kachlo Maisi Kura Hachis, so therefore the Gemara does not bring that pasuk here. When we call Makam of Nimbishur Sajin by Leila Dure, Kavish Enam is Chasim Mamona. So here, a situation of this Lashava Saveda situation, so it's not a situation where other people are chayiv, but it's a situation where you can do something, you can help somebody out, and you're not going to be at a loss, because this property was found money for you. So you're not going to be at a loss by giving it back, so it's appropriate to go above and beyond. Aval the sofa omnin, but the Gemara by Rabbi Barchan, his workers, b'hanah shukol lo yishavu lo l'chavachachavis, by the workers who broke the barrel, v'asu lo hefsek gadol, and made for him a great loss. I mean, I'm yishum of nimashur sadin, ain lo l'hafsid, that this, just because of yishagol of nimashur sadin, that's not enough to make him lose the money that he would have to pass over in terms of this hezek and in terms of paying them afterwards. Apparently, that idea over there is above and beyond the above and beyond. That what have we seen so far in Tosfos, that this is a situation where other people are chayiv and you're pater. So then, for you to go ahead and do it anyway, so that's considered to be l'fnim asher sadin of asher yasun. And then there's a situation where not necessarily anybody is chayiv, but it seems to be the right thing to do. This part of Tosfos was a little vague. Tosfos didn't really explain this. So nonetheless, there's a situation where other people aren't even chayiv, but it doesn't cost you anything and it's the right thing to do. So that's a situation of, maybe that's the situation that Sisa Yashua Tosos doesn't explain, but then this idea in the Gemara in the sixth parak of Darach Tovim and Orchos Tzadikim Tishmor, so that's the situation where there is a Hesed, and still it's indicated to do it. So it emerges from Tosos basically these three categories. Right? Other people are Chayiv, and you happen to be technically Pater. Some mysterious situation where it's the right thing to do. Again, Tosfos is not explaining exactly why, but it's not going to cost you, so you might as well do it. And an even greater status where there's apparently an even greater level to aspire for, where it's, it does cause you a loss, and you do it anyway, that's Derech Tzadikim, that's Derech Tovim and Orchos Tzadikim.
Couldn't I have had the most extreme one and then learned after all the others?
So the question is, what exactly is the obligation in each sense? I think what's emerging here, and again, Tosfos kind of requires you to fill in the blanks, is that there are different situations that don't necessarily overlap, and they don't necessarily fill in all the details of each other. So it's interesting, there is a discussion one could have, and one could ask in general, what exactly is the nature of the various lifnim mishuros hadin that we have? That, let's say, for example, in the context of Hashavas Aveda. So you return a property you're technically not obligated to return. So, okay, you're supposed to do that anyway. Is that a halacha in Hashavas Aveda? Or is that a halacha in something else? You say that as far as Hashavas Aveda, you're possibly completely, you don't have to do it. And there's some other imperative to do
it. It seems that way.
So it seems like you could maybe find room for both, I think, depending on the nature of the Lifnim Ashuras Adin that's at play. And probably you could posit that there are two different types of Lifnim Ashuras Adin. Is there a Chumash nearby?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. On the one hand, you could have a Lifnim Ashuras Adin. Thank you very much. You could have a Lifnim Ashuras Adin that's kind of external. That maybe you have a principle where whatever area of halacha you're dealing with, Hashavas Aveda, or your workers' compensation, or whatever it is, so there really is no obligation for you to make this decision, for you to take this step. But there's other issues, issues of Rahmanis, issues of Tzedakah, etc., etc., that indicate in this situation that it's not right for you to not step up to the plate. Yeah, so that's a matter of your own personal midos. So the Meiri, for example, in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, the Meiri talking about this Lifnim Ashuras Adin obligation. So he talks about Shleimus HaMidos. He talks about the idea of being somebody whose midos are complete, being somebody who has perfected character traits. So that's an idea of going above and beyond because your midos indicate that that's such. That if you want to be a compassionate person, you want to be a person who cares, you're going to have to take a different step. On the other hand, you have, so there, the Lifnim Ashuras Adin is really external to the din. Now, let's say in Hilchos Hashavas Aveda, it's yours, but the Rachmanis for the poor person who lost his property, and it's a technicality, so that's going to come from a different direction. Or maybe that's possibly the situation with the workers, right? In terms of straight nizikin, so they damage stuff, they're chayev. But in terms of rachmanis, for starving workers, so it's not going to be the characteristic of a Jew to let people suffer like this, even if on some level they deserve it. It's interesting. So the Sridei Ace has a tshuva about this. Sridei Ace has a tshuva where he talks about the difference between the midos hamusar and the letter of the law halacha, and where exactly do we figure out what it's where the lines are drawn and what's an obligation and what's not an obligation, etc., etc. And he makes reference to this pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that talking about taking a mashkam, and if you lend money, you're entitled to take collateral. But what if the collateral is something that a person needs to live? So you have to be careful with that. You have to make sure to, let's say if you take somebody's sleeping garment, so you have to make sure that he should have it for the time of sleeping. And the pasuk says, "Kihi chsusa levada, he simlaso laaro b'me yishkav, v'hayaki yitzak elai v'shamati kichonanani." That if you're going to take his clothes that he needs, so say to sleep in, so he's not going to have what to sleep in. He's going to be deprived of his basic human necessities. And b'me yishkav, what's he going to sleep in? In other words, it's an expression of rachmanis. It's saying, listen, it's fair that he should have to give collateral, but you're depriving him of basic necessities. And then the pasuk continues, so he'll cry out, he'll be miserable that he's been reduced to this level of indignity. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "V'shamati ki chananani," and I'm going to hear this. I'm going to hear him crying because I have rachmanis. So the Sridei Ace points to this pasuk as an example of where we kind of have these two different things interacting at the same time. That in terms of the business dealings, it's fair to say, listen, you got to give me collateral if you want to borrow money. But in terms of basic human rachmanis, so that has to be a factor as well. And of course, we're now in Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim is Sefer specifically. We mentioned last 2 weeks about how it's called the Sefer Hayasher. But it's also interesting to note that one of the basic obligations of Chesed is derived from the concept of Imitatio Dei, of Halachta V'drachav, that we follow in God's path. And as Chofetz Chaim points out in the Sefer Avos Chesed, that the theme of Svalachta V'drachov appears in Sefer Dvarim at least 8 times. He says it appears in the Chumash 8 times if you look at all in Sefer Dvarim. So this is a major theme that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Rachman, so you too have to be Rachman. So here the Pasuk is emphasizing this idea also, it's not in Dvarim and Mishpatim, but the idea of Ki Chanun Ani, that I am merciful, so listen, that's how I expect you to act as well. And that's going to impact on the decisions that you make. So that's one type of Lefnim Meshuras Hadin that you might have. Which, maybe that's the second category that Tosfos is not really explaining when it comes up, but a situation where, listen, it's not going to cost you anything. It's a Shavas Aveda, so it's found money. And this other guy is suffering. This other guy lost something which is very precious to him. Either maybe sentimentally, or maybe the value is very crucial. He's a poorer person and you're not. So then, why should you hold on to this Nesia, literally and figuratively? And why don't you give it back to him? Why don't you have Rachmanis? While the first situation, where he talks about other people being chayiv, and you happen to be Pater. So perhaps a good model for that is that you have a model, if you use Rav Saveda as an example as well, where whenever you have a conflict between two people, which essentially is what Hashavas Aveda is, you have conflicting rights. Because a person who finds something, so he has the right to keep it if it doesn't have any clear chiyuv of Hashavas Aveda. And on the other hand, the person who lost something has a right to get it back. So whenever you have this found property, so you have a clash between the rights of the finder and the rights of the person who lost it. So we have to draw the line somewhere and say who gets it when. When is it fair to say that the person who found it can rely on the assumption that nobody's going to come and claim it with a reasonable claim, and therefore he can keep it and live his life? And when is it reasonable to say that it should be returned to the person who lost it? So we have to draw the line somewhere. But still, there could be circumstances where it seems clear to us that if this was the only case that ever existed, if the Shulchan Aruch was being written for these two people, we would have said that it should have gone the other way. That there is a clear connection to the person who's claiming it, who lost it, to the property. And just because we have to draw the line as far as the halacha being a code of law that has to apply to everyone, so we had to draw the line somewhere else, but we could see, looking at the facts, that really it's only right that it should go to the person who's claiming it. Let's say, for example, this is not a halacha, it's just an example. You know, sometimes people, when they find lost properties, they put up a sign. Sometimes institutions do this, put up a sign, if anyone claims within 30 days, let's say. Right, it's just an arbitrary number. People decide that that's where we're going to draw the line. So, okay, so then maybe, you know, you decide that it's fair that if a person comes within 30 days, okay, we'll wait that long before allowing any finder to keep it. But if, we're not going to wait 20 years. So if a person finds something and nobody comes and claims it within a month, so we decide he can keep it. But let's say somebody comes after 30 days and 2 minutes. And we do the bell just went off. And the guy comes 2 minutes later, and it's clear that he's a poor person who lost the only property that he has, and you're a rich person who just can say technically, okay, the bell just went off 2 minutes ago, I get to keep it. So it would be clear that if this were the only case that ever happened, we would have said 30 days and 2 minutes. But we can't draw the line based on this case. So technically, letter of the law, it belongs to the person who found it, but the situation in this case would have pushed us into a different decision, so that's perhaps a different type of Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. So perhaps those are two different types of categories, and when it's coming from somebody's personal nidos, so then that's really something that's external to the din. That's something that's not a din in Hashavas Aveda or Nezikin or wages or whatever it is. But when it's something that you would say, listen, looking at this case, it really seems that this other guy should win even though it's against the letter of the law. So presumably that is a din in Hashavas Aveda. It's the Lefnim Meshuras Hadin of Hashavas Aveda. It's a different madriga of Hashavas Aveda.
So clear, to anybody looking at it externally, it seems very crystal clear. There's no debate. It's almost uncomfortable to discuss the issue because it seems so simplistic in what the answer should be. And if you were to hold the other position, it would only be like Rosh Hashanah to say the other side. But excluding a specific case,
mm-hmm.
if you have a case where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, this is what I want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Don't you have to only do the Veda for like three Rebellum?
Well, see, it's there are a lot of other details that that limit it tremendously. But we'll see them more.
So
about
if you have where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you this is what I want the result to be,
mm-hmm.
so Beis Din can't any shouldn't want to change it.
You say therefore how could you go with the Mishur
Zadin? For example, so the Mishur Zadin has to be a halacha in the individual and not in the klal, because then you can extrapolate the halacha to Gol Adam and to a person who kills.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a hatchet and he hits the hatchet, hits the wood, and the handle flies off. How could he be chayev? Doesn't even make sense. He didn't do anything.
Well, he's chayev.
That he has to run.
Why should he chayev galus for that?
Right.
Well, that's the whole category of shugi.
So why wouldn't listening to Shemuras and Din work in that case? What you see?
Why should you say that everyone who does something without intent should be chayev?
Right. Because most cases.
Should be chayev, I guess, some type of, you have to make up a new model. Which one did you say that everybody who does some type of avera, the shogeg, should have some type of reaction? Is that
the Shem Midah of this Mishur Sedim, because it's the shogeg. Totally.
Figure out exactly what that means.
The Mishur Sedim
has to be an individual choice that we have to emulate God.
How can Beis Din get involved in this?
Because it can't. It will ruin the justice system.
As you asked last week, very correctly, that also the Torah says you're not allowed to show preference to a poor person.
We may be over an individual Easter.
Right, so that's very compelling in general. But it's interesting, and I'll just.
I can argue the other point, because then you don't have a society of
Rahmanim in a society.
Right, but I'm trying to approach it just very.
Yeah, no, so it's a fascinating dichotomy, and I guess, so we won't make this too many parts because we want to get on to some other issues, so we'll try to have this year be the last part of this discussion, and there's still a lot more to say. So it's interesting, the whole struggle here that you find, and in terms of the Gemara and the end of that six parak level of Rachana's story, so is that really the din or not? Is that really when he was told din ha'afi, so is that the din? So it's interesting to see that in Shulchan Aruch and Tzimini Beis, so you find that the Ramah says that there are two deists in Rishonim about whether or not Beis Din will be kofa on the Sim Mishur Sadin. Will Beis Din impose a principle of Lefnim Mishur Sadin? And essentially the Mordechai really based on our Gemara. I mean, in the sixth paragraph, they're all Argamars, that's the one that we mentioned there. So the Mordechai says that Beis Din is going to be kofa on Lefnim Mishur Sadin. They are going to impose it. And the Rosh is the other opinion. The Rosh says that even though the ideal exists, it's not something, as Mr. Linsky was pointing out, it's hard to believe that a Beis Din could be told to step in and impose this, because then how exactly is our justice system going to work? So it's interesting to note that even though you have the Rosh saying what seems to be logical, so then there is a big machlokus in the later Doris. So the Bach says, for example, that he thinks that if the situation is such that you have one party who's very wealthy and one party who's really going to be suffering, so then the Lefnim Mishur Sadin is so compelling that he thinks that everyone would agree that we would be kofa on Lefnim Mishur Sadin. And still we have to figure out what is Lefnim Mishur Sadin. It doesn't mean that if, let's say, the poor guy steals from the rich guy, so that he's allowed to keep it. That's not Lefnim Mishur Sadin. It means we have to still figure out what are the cases where the letter of the law is one way, but there's some real solid slur to say that there's some other factor at play. The Kiva Eger suggests that he thinks that it's not much of a machlokus, really, because he writes in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, even though there are others who understand it differently, who he also notes, but the Kiva Eger says that we're talking about being kofa. So we don't really mean that Beis Din is going to use actual judicial powers to force someone to go with Lefnim Mishur Sadin. That's a meeting, let's say, for example, if the guy's going to say, no, I'm not going to go listen to Shor Zedin, so we'll send out the marshals and we'll do whatever we have to do. It means that Beis Din will give him Musar Shmuz. That Beis Din will say, listen, the letter of the law is you win. But if you have any decency in you, you'll act differently. And we'd be very unimpressed with you if you didn't act as the Musar Zedin. And we would not consider you an appropriate shidduch for our daughter if you're such a guy. And it could say whatever they say. In describing this kind of behavior, that's just as basically kofa v'dvarim, that they can use their language, they can use their verdict and the way they phrase things in order to create a pressure of l'fnei mishur hadin.
I would even understand if they would force him, like by get, they would beat him, because the halach is that he doesn't have to give the get, but the person's rutzon should be to be, you know, decent, and that's what he would want to be if he understood how to be decent. So they force him even physically to realize what it is.
A little bit more complicated, because that though may be referring only to a situation where he really is technically chayef to give the get.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are different circumstances. Although it's interesting to try to draw a parallel between some of the language that you find here and some of the practices, because just to kind of shoot the end again, because we're running out of time, but so just to quickly under the wire, because I think by next we should start another topic, right? But just to throw some other concepts on the table before we run out of time. So you find that, for example, some of the Rishonim say that if a person is an Adam Chashuv, a person is known as a tzaddik or the like, so then it's all the more so possible that we would push him to act within the Shor Zedin. That that person should act in keeping with his own standards, and if he's a person who is of a lofty level, so then he should act within the Shor Zedin, and we would even impose that. And the Chassam Sofer writes that even if a person is an ani, but he's a chashuv person, we would tell him that he should go within the Shor Zedin. So that gives us a whole different understanding of within the Shor Zedin. It means that there is an ideal of behavior that we'd say, listen, everybody would try to act kindly and compassionately in the way. But, as a legislated system of law, we have to have a basic bottom line. Because we have to have a system that can apply to everyone. But we can also convey that we think that people should try to act differently. So a person who is known to be a pious person of great stature, we'd say, listen, that's non-keeping, where you can't be such a tzaddik and still treat people on a very letter of the law kind of way, and we would actually be kofahim, and that's maybe what the Gemara is saying in the end of the sixth paragraph. But Rachana is such a the chashuv tam chacham, so for him to be mean to his workers is not something that we could put up with. It's interesting, there is a sefer, it's written by a tam chacham who I made the acquaintance of a few years ago. I know he's interested in selling copies of his book. This is Rabbi Edeltuck, as a sefer on Bereishis. And he suggests that also, though the pasuk says about Avraham Avinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parshas Vayera, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about Avraham, Ki Yedatev, Avon Asher Yitzav, Ez Bonav, Ez Beisu Achara, but I know about Avraham that he's going to instruct his family and his descendants in the ways of Chesed. The pasuk says, Vishamru Derech Hashem, La'asol Stokku Mishvot, V'man Hevi Hashem, Al Avraham, Es Asher Diver Alav. So he wants to suggest that this pasuk v'shamru derech Hashem also tzakom mishpat. That's a remez to all the different levels that you find in the Gemara. That tzakom mishpat is the snim mishur sadin, and v'shamru derech Hashem is a reference to derech tovim and orcho tzadikim tishmor that we find in Rav Rachana, and they are basically continuously ascending levels of how much you are connected to the basic value system of the Torah. And then he goes on to say, which is an idea that we find in Akamara as well, that when a person is on a higher level, so it becomes less optional, it becomes basically his obligation. So the truth is, there are still a few more things we should say about this, so despite the desire to move on, so maybe we should allow us to go to Shacharis now, and I believe that next week we'll just add a few more words about this, and then we'll get into some other themes about the employer-employee relationship that emerged from the Gemara. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful shot.